Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Jack Caesar. I met Jack the other day when I went down to a press conference with Gary Greenberg to talk about the Child Victims Act. And Jack came up to speak, and some of the things that he talked about were really mind-boggling. So Jack is here to do an expose on what's going on in the city and also on the state level. So Jack, I'm sure you've spoken out before, but is it really difficult to do this?
Hi Cynthia, thank you for having me on. In my case, I have to admit, I did not have a hard time coming forward later on in life. I didn't start talking. I was raped at 13 years old at the Albany Catholic Diocese at St. Teresa's of Avila in Albany, New York, with Gene Hubert, the janitor, running a sex ring out of the school where he raped myself, my friends, and many more people that he raped in the boiler room, the janitorial room, his home in Glens Falls. And he also took the kids up to Paradox Lakes camp in New York and with other camp counselors that were raping all the kids. So I started to talk about it when I was about 17 years old to my best friend that I have here in Florida since I was 17. And I would just bring it up just to see how others would react to it also, just like what kids do today. And I never had a problem with talking about it, and so I did. But I never told my parents or anything. I lived with it because growing up I also had two with severe birth defects, so a lot of the focus was on them, and I understood that. So when I was being raped, you know, my parents always thought everything was fine when it wasn't, so I kept everything in. When you're a child, Cynthia, you know, it's very hard for you to come forward because what do you say? Like when I was raped at 13, when I was forced to ingest the janitor's semen and then he proceeded to do other things to me. After that, you know, I couldn't go to my parents and say, oh, mom, dad, the janitor just pulled his penis out and I did this to, you know, you just feel, you know that it's wrong. You don't know how to deal with it because you're 13 years old. So I kept very quiet, Cynthia, kept everything to myself. But that's how I started. At 17, I started talking about it.
So tell us a little bit about the incident. And was the administration aware about it? And what did they do?
Okay, this is a very interesting thing here because people, when they only hear a little bit of a story, they don't understand the whole thing. Here's how it happened with me. The janitor came to gym class, because we were having it outside one day, and said, I would like to come out after school. I would like to talk to you about a camp. And, you know, at that time, we looked up at the teachers and the janitors because it was a small school as people in charge, so we didn't think anything wrong. So I did go after school, but I asked my friend Steven Erickson and John Dober to come with me. So when we went to the school, the janitor said, you guys wait outside. So we locked the door and kept them outside. He took me into the janitorial room and asked me to pull down his overall jeans, which I was so nervous I couldn't, and he did. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. He proceeded to give me oral sex and forced me to swallow semen and all this. But so after that incident, we know today, we didn't know then, that Steven Erickson, one of my friends that were waiting outside, knew what was happening to me because he was already multiple raped for many times every week for a while. We know that now. So after that incident, Cynthia, I went back to class the next day. And I went into the class, and there was a big, on the steam windows, because in the wintertime, the steam windows, there was a big heart saying Jack plus Gene. The janitor's name is Gene Hubert. So I said, how the hell does they know? Well, Now we're fast-forwarding today. I asked Steven Erickson, did you write that up on the window? He said, no. So John Dober must have, the other kid that must have been raped by him, that has a hard time today coming forward. So also the teachers knew. I went to health class. His name was Randall Wrench, the teacher. He asked me to come up in front of the class to show him CPR, the class. So he tilted my head back and pinched my nose, and he said, don't worry, I won't tell Gene. So as a little kid, not Gene Hubert, he means, so I'm saying, how do they know? So we also had to walk around the hallway at school to go to different classes, and we also had a math teacher. His name is Fred McDill. He used to say to me, say hello to Gene. So I'm like, okay, what is going on here? So I would also go to Mr. Anastasia's class, which is our history teacher. That's where the steam windows were and where Jack plus Gene. So these teachers knew, but they even bullied me to a point. And, you know, back then I was just didn't know what to do. I just kept quiet, Cynthia. I didn't say anything. My eighth grade was a torture. Even after I left eighth grade, my grandmother lived right next to the convent, which was across the street of the school, St. Teresa's of Avila, where I was raped. So when I used to walk four blocks, we only lived four blocks away from my grandmother, every day, even after eighth grade, because I couldn't wait to get out of that class or that the school year, I would have to see the janitor mowing the lawn, shoveling the snow at my grandmother's house, because that's where I had to walk past every day. So I started to take a different route and go the opposite way so I wouldn't have to bump into him and, you know, walk past him every day. So my torture lasted years and years, even after I left eighth grade.
So from what you know, I'm sure you were not the only victim. If you were to make a guess, how many other children were victimized in the same time period you were one person?
Yeah, well, we know now, Cynthia, that they were many, many rapists at one time. We had many. We had even our bishop, Bishop Howard Hubbard, had to pay $2.2 million to get off the hook for something he did in Washington Park with a young kid who committed suicide. Then we had Father McCure at our school also raping the kids, but he was also raping the kids and taking them out of state. That's where he got caught in prison, or in Massachusetts. That's why he's in prison for 25 years. Since he's been in prison, one of my other friends, David Tapino, who was raped by him, came forward to the district attorney's office also. We also had Father David Bentley and three other priests raping at Parsons Home for Children. They were raping Curtis Oldhouse and his two brothers from 9 to 16 years old. They received settlements. Father David Bentley now lives in Kentucky free. And we also had, like, Father Roche, who was also involved with the Boy Scouts, because the Boy Scouts are also involved here, who they say they don't want the Child's Victim Act to pass because the Catholic Church is involved also in the Boy Scouts and have been raping those kids just as long as the priests have been raping us in 1977. I always said, Cynthia, when this is all said and done and the federal investigation is done in New York, New York will be the biggest cover-up in United States history with the cover-ups they had. And there's more to that story also, and more rapists in the Albany Catholic Diocese.
Would you say that what went on here is a microcosm of the rest of the country, or do you think it's more prevalent here?
No, this has happened in just about every diocese in the United States of America. The Pennsylvania District Attorney's report even proves in that, with about the sexual abuse after 2 years, even Pope Francis covered up the sexual abuse in Chile and Argentina. He and a lot of the people in evangelical Christians don't realize that the last Pope, Cynthia, was not sick, Pope Benedict. He had an arrest warrant out from the European Community on crimes on humanity. That's why he's stuck in the Vatican and cannot leave. If he leaves, he will be arrested. Even Pope Benedict's brother was caught sexually abusing kids. So this is a terrorist organization of organized crime on children. And don't forget, the Vatican Bank has also been caught money laundering. So what they really need to do, and we also brought this up, they need to enact the RICO Act. That's when they go after gangs of organized crime. This is exactly what the Catholic Church is. And when Governor Cuomo says we got to be careful in the bill not to bankrupt the church, well, Mr. Cuomo, you are obstructing justice once again. We do need to bankrupt any organization that has raped children for decade after decade after decade after decade. And Mr. Cuomo, not only should they be bankrupt, they should be eliminated from the planet altogether, because you don't need a house of God being criminal when you can stay at home, kneel by your bedside or not, and talk to God and pray to God yourself. That's all that needs to be done. We do not need to go into a Catholic church and put money into a basket where they steal, where they did in Albany Catholic Diocese, and gave that money to my brother and the friends that he was raping to keep them quiet. So any parent these days that knows what's going on, and they have to by this point, and goes to a Catholic church and supports this terrorist organization are a part of the criminal activity by supporting a terrorist organization. That's why more and more properties are being sold. That's why people are not going to church any longer, as many. My friend in Washington says 4 people go on the weekend. This is why they have to close it down, and it's going to get even worse. The Catholic Church could have done what they in the beginning and saved themselves, and the victims would have been all right too. But instead, they decided to cover it up, which the cover-up, Cynthia, is worse than the crimes, almost.
So let's talk a little bit about justice in the city of Albany. Describe what happened to you when you were vocal about it and you tried to talk about this issue. What transpired at that point?
Okay. Well, first, what I did is I was wondering at the time why Governor Cuomo was so silent and wouldn't speak up for years and years. So I called his office and talked to his, what I call now, brain dead aide, Emma Davis, who I had a long conversation with. I talked about Bishop Hubbard, Gary McCure, Father Bentley, Father Roche, and this was the same time as the Stony Hook killings, where they went into that school and blew the poor little innocent little kindergarten's heads, all those kids. It made me so sick. So in our realm of our conversation, which we had a long conversation, I said to her, instead of these deranged people going and blowing these poor little innocent kids' heads off, why they don't direct the anger towards the pedophile priest and blow their heads off? It was just a little statement in a conversation. Now, remember, Emma Davis didn't know who I was. So after we got done talking, now the afterwards, she thought that I was going to go harm kids. And I've been an advocate for years, but here comes the corruption. So after that, I got a call from an unknown number from a man, his name is John J. Keyes, and stated, "Mr. Caesar, we listened to your voicemail. It's not what you said, it's how you said it." I said, "Sir, stop lying." It was a direct conversation. So I said, "Why don't you go after the pedophiles and stop going after the victims?" I hung up. I bruised his ego, so he started the paperwork. About a month later, I live in Florida. This was happening in New York. My house was surrounded by cops, so I decided, I'm like, what's going on? So I was just coming home, so I went down the street to see what was going on, and they followed me. So they pulled me aside and said, "Mr. Caesar, we have an arrest warrant out for you from Albany, New York." I'm like, "What?" So there are 3 cops. One of the ones was a woman, and she goes, and I told her what it was for, and she goes, "I understand. I was also abused at the church." So anyway, they arrested me. They put me in solitary confinement. I was like shocked. My friend got out of surgery. He didn't know where I was. It was the most stressful thing, Cynthia, I've ever been through. So it took a couple days, 3 days to actually get me out, because until I could get a hold of somebody, they didn't even know where I was. So once I did, I said, "Call the lawyer." And so she came, and thank God, Cynthia, that my best friend had a friend. Her name is Evelyn Zingler, a lawyer. So she represented me at that time. And so she knew the judge for 30 years she worked with. So they tried to charge me with a terrorist threat by saying that. And that's why they put me in solitary confinement. And so after I got a lawyer, 3 days later, after losing 13 pounds in 3 days, I got out. I wasn't very good. I went to my doctor. He goes, "You don't look good." I said, "I'm not good." So I took a little time to gain my strength back and stuff. And then I hired a lawyer, Steve Coffey, from O'Connell and Arowitz in Albany, New York. To make a long story short, because I got the Civil Liberties Union involved because there was no voicemail. He lied. They tried to lie to get me to say something I didn't do. So when the Civil Liberties Union got involved, the district attorney had no choice. They offered me an ACOD, which means they don't admit anything, I don't, and they drop it. So, of course, it was so stressful to me, I said, okay, I took it. But then the Civil Liberties Union said, Mr. Caesar, you took that plea or whatever. It's not even a plea. They just dropped it. So we can't pursue with your case. We were going to pursue it because they lied because there was no voicemail. So anyway, everything was dropped. I tried to get the same lawyer, Steve Coffey, to sue the state of Florida for what they did to me, but he wouldn't do it. He goes, our whole office has a conflict of interest. And that's because Cynthia, Steve Coffey, used to work for the district attorney's office. That's why I hired him in the first place. Number one, there was any other corruption, and I found any, and there are, because he won't go any further against David Rossi or anything because he's buddy-buddy with them. So they said, Jack, the whole office has a conflict of interest. We cannot take that other case. So that's the injustice that I got out of it, and it really did affect me in a great deal, in a way far more than I ever thought, Cynthia.
Now, when you started knowing about Gary Greenberg, did you call him and tell him your story? And
yes.
How did you actually – go ahead.
Okay, well, I wanted to add a couple things to what I just said. When Emma Davis sent over the statement to David Rossi for him to proceed with my arrest, I want this to be very clear, her statement was false. She started out saying in her statement that I said I was raped by a priest. I was never raped by a priest. I was raped by a janitor. So her recalling everything was completely false. So David Rossi, who I called a sidekick, because when I brought the all four victims in there and said we were involved in a sex ring, he said, no, you weren't. And I said, how can you say that without an investigation, knowing of all the sexual abuse that the Albany Diocese has accumulated after the last decades? So he allowed that to go through because I called him a sidekick. So he tried to get me back also in a way. And the proof is in Emma Davis's statement. So I said to Mr. Rossi, are you either corrupt or incompetent? Did you read that statement? For the last 2 years, he would never call me back because I wanted to talk to him about how that evidence is there. But he will not call me back because they know they're in the wrong. I've been calling him for the last few years to ask him to call me back, Cynthia. They refuse and never have called me back.
So
with Gary, you want me to speak to?
No,
I'm sorry.
Your
go ahead.
Story is definitely, you know, horrific. And the fact that you did not get justice in Albany County is just as horrific.
Go ahead.
Do you think this happened a lot?
Yes. I mean, it's so corrupt. That's why Albany, New York is number one in corruption. That's the fact. And there's many, many reasons why they earn the number one in corruption. I know you asked me about Gary Greenberg. How I met Gary Greenberg is from social media. I started to, for the last 9 years, putting all Catholic stuff up there in politics. That's all I do, politics and Catholic Church stuff and some other things.
Okay.
And that's how I met Gary, through the social media and the other.
Okay, in 2010, I believe, when the Marriage Equality Act was passed, what you said was shocking. Can you talk a little bit how that came into being?
Right. So Governor Cuomo at the time, when they were passing gay marriage in Washington, he needed that for his political life, actually. And so, of course, he didn't want any resistance. And the only person or organization that would really resist that is the Catholic Church and Cardinal Dolan. So Cardinal Dolan did not give him a hard time at all. because Cuomo needed it. But in return, their backdoor deal was silence of the Child Victim Act, and that's exactly what we got. Nothing for years, because that allowed Cardinal Dolan to start opening up compensation plans to pay off the victims, as many as he can, and that would also take the rights of them to sue. So he went, you know, that's why all these Catholic dioceses have their own compensation plans, because they're trying to get people to settle to take their rights away so they don't sue when they the laws pass. They will have no recourse anymore. So, and the only two dioceses that don't have it is the Albany and one other. But so that's what their backdoor deal was, and that's exactly what we got. And Cardinal Dolan even said, and it was written up in the New York Daily News one day, he goes, that he will let everybody know when it's okay for the Child Victim Act to pass, because they do have an in with the governor, and the governor is very corrupt in different ways. You know, his other aide got caught corrupt, you know, with corruption. If he's has people working for him and he doesn't know that they're all corrupt and doing corrupt things, then Mr. Governor, step aside and let somebody else take your position. Because when his mm-hmm. dynasty with his father and him, you know, when you have a dynasty like that, you become too comfortable. That's why we need term limits in our politics to get these, what I say, old goats out of there that's been there too long, lining their pockets with money.
Wow. So,
and then, as you know, the senators, like I said in the press conference, there's other, as a result, proved why this hasn't passed for 13 years, with the other Flanagan not allowing a vote, Dean Skelos, another Republican that went to prison. He wouldn't allow a vote either, but him and his son is corrupt in prison. Sheldon Silver, like I said, also was dating and cheating on his wife with a New York lobbyist from the New York Catholic Conference that didn't want the Child Victim Act to pass. So he's dating her, so can you imagine? He wouldn't allow the law to pass either. It's so corrupt inside that this is what we have to stop. That's why Gary Greensburg, I give him all the credit in the world, focused the last 2 years on getting these Republicans out only, and he succeeded with that. And that's the only way you're going to get this law to pass. That's why we think it's going to pass before January 30th. A bill will be Linda Rosen, Linda Rosenberg, and who else? Brad Holeman are going to submit a bill by the end of the month to for a vote, and then the governor said he will sign it if they pass it early. We cannot let it go to April, Cynthia, because if it does, the same thing will happen as last year. They'll water it down or not get to it. So we have to pass it by the end of the month.
So I think as this saga unfolds, I'd like to have you back on Focus on Albany to share your thoughts. But will the Child Victims Act in New York State eradicate all the injustice that's been done?
Well, I'll tell you one thing it does. Anybody that did attend a Catholic school or church and was raped and affected, because I know most of a lot of people that are alcoholics, drug addicts, and suicide. I didn't do that, Cynthia, because tennis saved my life. I played tennis also at that time at school, so it saved my life. It's rampant. It's but justice, at least you know when you can at least let it out. Just like if somebody's an alcoholic saying, "I'm an alcoholic." Once you say that, it relieves you of the pressure and helps, because so many kids have kept this in, Cynthia. And when you keep things in, it manifests into something really not good. And like I said, alcohol, drugs, suicide. I didn't go there, so I'm fighting for all my friends. I have the money and the voice, and I will not let Albany, New York, and the political criminals in that arena ever bring me down, ever. I will fight to my death for what is right. I only speak the truth, because when you speak the truth, you have nothing to worry about.
Now, I'm sure you've seen the movie Spotlight, right?
Yes.
That really didn't make a dent in having the Child Victims Act in New York passed. How do you feel about that? What do you think?
Well, when you say it didn't make a dent, I would have to disagree. Yes, it did. It didn't have a dent on the Child Victim Act because you are dealing with inside criminals, with senators. So how do you pass something when the criminals are in charge? But it did make a very big dent because it exposed them, and everybody knows. You just expose year after year until people cannot believe what they've heard. And so you've got to be kidding. This has not ended. This doesn't. And the more they hear, like in the Pennsylvania District Attorney's report on sexual abuse, like in that one, I'll give you one example. What happened is a priest tied up this kid in the confessional booth. The priest tried to have the kid give him oral sex. He wouldn't. So he took the crucifix while he's tied up and sexually abused him with the crucifix. So as long as we expose these stories and people understand what's really happening to these children, then they wake up. So, yes, Spotlight exposed it and put it into the media and put it into people's heads. No, it didn't have a direct impact right up front on the Child Victim Act, but it did have an effect on the Child Victim Act as a whole, but not right away.
Okay.
But it is, we have to expose.
Okay, so Jack, as this story unfolds, will you come back on Focus on Albany and share your
thoughts?
Absolutely,
Cynthia.
Okay.
Anytime you want me to, because I'm not doing this just for me. Never did. I'm doing this for all the kids and my friends that are not here, that have died from, like Steven Erickson was the one that was just deposed on his deathbed. He came forward for me and my case, and he's fought for 9 years, but now he just died, and I'm still alive, and I'm fighting for him and every one of my friends that were raped, and I will never give up until each one of them gets justice.
Okay, so Jack, I will, let's talk again. You've been listening to Jack Caesar, and this is Focus on Albany. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about the show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Jack, thank you so much for coming on this show and talking about this heart-wrenching issue. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you, Cynthia.